Good morning. Today is Wednesday, February the 1st. How are you this blessed, crisp morning? I'm doing well. Thank you for tuning in to A Voice of a People live here with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. Also, you can download a free app on any electronic device. The app is called TuneIn, and once you download that, please search WWGH. Take advantage of the many talk show programs we have to offer you. Thank you once again for tuning in. I'm so glad that you are listening, and hopefully we will be having a great show for you today. Or if you would like to be a part of our conversation, you also have the opportunity to call in 740-383-9944. Let me share with you those who faithfully support the Voice of a People, and that's starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC of 1325 North Main Street of Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-382-8552. We also have Inspect Ohio, LLC, which is no longer in operation, but Cheryl Lee, who is the coordinator of Child's Evangelism Fellowship, known as the Good News Club, located in all the Marion City schools in Union County, and also all of the county schools of Marion, Ohio. Well, they will be also having a silent auction and luncheon on March the 4th of 2023 at Cornerstone Alliance Church. Doors open at 10:30, so mark your calendars if you like. You know, luncheons, which is food, and silent auctions. They usually have a great lunch, and not only that, a lot of different items that you can bid on. Okay, Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Their ongoing announcement: no free produce until April the 15th of 2023. No free produce until April the 15th of 2023. And I don't want to leave you out. Those of you who faithfully listen to A Voice of a People, thank you for your support and taking your time and energy to listening. Thank you so very much. If it is your first time, I pray it will not be your last time. I also like to start my show off with a thought for today. And it's titled Determination. True determination is a combination of single-mindedness and flexibility. When we are sure of what we need to achieve, we are able to move forward. When we find an obstacle in our way, we are able to make it in our stride, to take it in our stride. Like a river cuts its own path through the land, each of us is able to create our own route toward our destination. I'm going to read that last paragraph again. Like a river cuts its own path through the land, each of us is able to create our own route toward our destination. Wow, what a thought for today.
I love that. Like a river cuts, right?
Yeah, amen. My guest today is Johnny Jackson. He is Diversity Supervisor of the Marion City Schools. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad you had time to come and
visit. Oh, yeah. I'm super excited to be here, especially on the first day of Black History Month.
I didn't even think about that. Isn't that something? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and I left my calendar at home.
Oh, your Black History calendar.
Yes. I have to make sure I get it in my satchel for tomorrow. Yes.
Sure. So
that's my thought for today. I haven't seen you since the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, and not only that, the trip that you and Pastor Jackie and Sister Tara took the youth on to Georgia.
Yeah, it was super powerful. We took 15 black high schoolers to Atlanta, Georgia to see Spelman, see Morehouse, and do a civil rights tour. It was super powerful because when I was in high school, I actually had the same experience. Okay. I went to Atlanta with a group of us to see HBCUs and then also do kind of a tour of the city. So it's basically, for me, it's giving back something I was given.
Oh,
so
that's
super
great.
Powerful.
That's great. What kind of impact did it have on the youth?
Well, this past Sunday, we had a reflection at Logos where we invited people who, you know, helped fund the trip, parents, also community members, and six of our young people, six out of the 15, were able to talk a little bit about how it changed their perception of going to a historically black college. Also, the first time that many of them have flown before. So that was super, like, life-changing for them. And then even just like that kind of self-esteem piece, when you go to a place and you see black folks in leadership that are studying hard, that are learning certain things, I think that it kind of shifted the way in which they experience education. Because not every day are they experiencing very powerful leaders who are melanated or who are African-American in school and city officials and that type of thing. So I think it was powerful from what they recounted. And I do think maybe in 20 years, maybe they're the ones that are then sitting in these type of seats, you know, leading radio shows or doing diversity work in Marion City Schools. So hopefully that's what it is, that they're the next leaders and we prepare them for it.
That is a great experience that they had, because it's a different world.
It is. It is.
You know, living up here in the North and predominantly white culture. And, you know, that's all you see, basically. I mean, there's a few of us here. I consider a few, you know, as far as the total population. But when you step out of your comfort zone, even though we're, I'm not saying we're not comfortable where we are, but when you step out of your comfort zone and you see a whole new world, because just like, the series, A Different World.
That's such a powerful experience. Like, I think also going, in summers, I go to Detroit to see my aunt and uncle. And Detroit, similar to Atlanta, is like a, you know, 80% majority African-American city, or what they call Chocolate City. And it's a powerful experience for me doing that as a young person, all the time going to Detroit and seeing, you know, people who look like me everywhere, in power and leadership and that type of thing. So it does, it opens up your world in a different way.
You
know, right now, you know, we have Black Panther and Wakanda Forever and the, you know, those comic book series and shows. Well, you know, in a lot of ways, like those of us that live in small towns who are a small majority, like when we go to, you know, majority chocolate cities, that's almost like Wakanda for us.
Yeah,
it opens up a different world, a different universe.
Yes, it does. And when you said Wakanda, I didn't get a chance to see the movie yet. But I remember when the first one came out, I was like, when the first one was at the theater, because I like Superman, Batman, you know, Spider-Man. So why didn't we get a new Black Panther?
Why didn't we get a new one? I think they wanted to go a different direction, like with, I think of like, so the movie Woman King came out, and, you know, powerful black woman leads are right now the trend. So there was a shift. There was a shift, like, okay, so the Woman King has come out, and now they needed to decide if, who are they going to have as the next Black Panther, and they decided to go with Princess Shuri, which... So I work with 6th and 7th grade boys mostly, a lot of times. 6th and 7th grade black boys. And that was a debate amongst all of us. Like, should we have a man as Black Panther? Or should we have a woman as Black Panther? And then kind of like working through and talking about all that.
So what was the majority?
It was split. It was 50-50. And I actually took seven of my students in Harambe. That's the name of the project I run. Seven of them to the movie theaters here in Marion to see it. And they loved it.
It was a good movie.
They loved the movie. They loved the kind of action scenes. But also the notion of Telecon, which is the indigenous community. And also Wakanda, which is this African indigenous community, and those two communities kind of being in conflict, but also like seeing that on the screen, they really kind of enjoyed that piece. I enjoyed it too.
I heard it was a good movie, and I don't doubt that at all.
Sure.
Because, you know, she was great in the first one.
Sure.
And I'm sure she was excellent in this one.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, when Batman dies, we get a new Batman. You know what I'm saying?
That's real. That's real. You don't get a Batwoman.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
We get a new, you know.
I think that's all the debate online, too. Like, why wasn't Chadwick Boseman's character then replaced with someone? And really, it's a Ryan Coogler, who is the director. That's his choice, yeah?
Whoa.
Yeah, that's like kind of his choice. But it did. I think it caused a lot of, like, friction.
Yeah,
a lot of friction.
Yeah. Because I guess, you know, I'm not against women being in leadership or leading the way, you know, because I'm one of them. But I don't want to just erase the character of a man in his position as well. So
that's real. That kind of legacy.
Yeah. He's supposed to be our protector.
Yeah.
Our provider.
That's real.
So.
Yeah.
That's just my little.
That's the 2 cents, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Right,
I feel you.
But, hey,
I feel you on that.
That's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
But, you know, like, I do think with sci-fi, or what they call, like, Afrofuturism, like in Detroit a couple years ago, they had this sign that said, like, I see black people in the future. I think that, you know, black sci-fi is something that here locally we can really think about. And I think that's what we talk about often is, like, what are we doing for Black History Month? What are we doing for Juneteenth? The notion of anticipating time.
Right.
And how not only are we anticipating time in our events and, like, how we can be in leadership, but it also is very powerful when we're at the table deciding. Not other groups, not, you know, other, you know, folks of color or white folks, but, like, black folks are at the table deciding how we want our histories written, how we want to be acknowledged, and how holidays go down.
Right.
I think it's a really powerful thing when you're able to be at the table and have that kind of, like, green light. You can green light the good things about your community.
I think so. But, you know, I thank God for those people who find it necessary to try to honor us in their way. But,
sure. And to be in partnership with us.
Yes, to be in partnership.
To be in partnership with. So the notion of you trying to be ahead or you be at the front, I think that that's a problematic when we're in partnership and we're speaking about black histories or, like, today I was reading the narrative of Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass is such an important figure to the abolitionist movement. And I think it's so important to understand, like, his plight of reading was alongside his plight to escape a plantation. Those things went hand in hand. But, you know, that's also symbolic of lots of, you know, black cultural movements. The struggle of education for liberation was very key to, you can go 1890s, you can go 1990s, you can go even today.
Right.
The notion of being able to read, write, speak, and create is a very essential thing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I think some of our young people are moving right along in that area.
Yes.
My niece has written her book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Armani Borden.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to My World.
Wow.
She's a published author right now.
Wow, that's
and
powerful.
I think her book is on Amazon. You can purchase it there or on Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, that's super powerful.
Isn't it? And she didn't tell anybody.
Yeah. She's just out there doing it.
And with Christmas Eve, here she is.
With her book.
Yeah. Like, oh my.
Yeah. That's
so
super
proud of
powerful.
Her. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long history. And understanding that, like, literacy and book writing is such an important thing. And firsthand accounts of who you are, how you come to the world, who your people are, and what your experience are is important.
Mm-hmm.
So
it
powerful.
Is.
Congrats to your niece.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
congrats,
you. We're
yeah.
so proud of her, you know, to keep a secret like that. I mean, I don't know if it was not only that, she's already writing a second one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She has a series coming out.
Oh, she has a series. Okay.
See that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, hopefully we can get her in the school or in the library and other places to talk about the book, talk about the process. That'd be super powerful.
It would be.
For our young people.
Would be. Mm-hmm. She was a guest on here for, I think we were here for like 3 hours.
Oh, okay.
On a Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she could just, you know, advertise her book and talk mm-hmm. a little bit about it and what inspired her to write it. And
sure.
And that's a good idea. If you want, I could give you her name and number.
Yeah, I like that.
Set that up
mm-hmm.
for her. That'd be great. That'd be really great.
Yeah, I definitely like that. And I know that some of our young people are very much interested in either hearing the story or going through their own process of writing their own story.
Yeah, because we don't know who God has already touched in mm-hmm. their minds and hearts to develop a story. She said this was based on a dream she had years ago.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That is powerful. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the dreams we have, and sometimes we just dismiss them.
Mm-hmm. As Langston Hughes might say, that's a dream deferred. Like, what does this dream do? Right?
Right.
Yeah, That's powerful.
It is very powerful. Wow. So, how's things going in the school?
I mean, the project that I'm running at the middle school is really, it's wonderful. I probably have around 35 students that I'm working with in Harambe, and it's both focused on African-American boys, but we also have girls in our project, so that's going pretty good.
Great.
As the news might share or might know, that we have our first woman of color, who is our superintendent. I believe first woman of color, Olympia De La Flora, which is super exciting. And we're just kind of moving right along with the learning. We're in February, so there's some testing happening for our English language learning students and that type of thing. So
they still do the aptitude test and all that, or is it different?
Like a state test,
Ohio,
almost like an aptitude test,
right.
Just to gauge like what you're learning and how you're learning, that type of thing. So
Now, did they have that during the past 2 years because of COVID, and did the children or the students still have to do those type of tests?
Yeah, so they were paused while the testing was still going on. The state kind of gives you a little bit of grace, if you can say it like that. They give you a little bit of grace on your scores. But now we're out, and it's time to get back to the learning. We adopted a new curriculum. So in this curriculum, it really is focused on like the literacy, also the diversity in characters, focused on the history, focused on really like that student and teacher connection in the curriculum as well. So I think there's some good things and big things happening in Marion City Schools.
That's good to hear, because we heard about all the bad things last year. The teachers resigning, and I guess it was about 40 of them, and losing the superintendent and assistant principals, I think it was. And so,
it's been a transition. It's like it's a culture shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whenever you have a culture shift, and the field of education is shifting as well. You have people who are deciding that they might not necessarily want to be in education as a field, or maybe Marion City Schools isn't a good fit for them particularly. And you also know that over the last, let's say, decade in Marion, we had an opioid crisis. We also had a pandemic that happened. We also have a racial and social justice uprising around the nation, and Marion isn't in a bubble. We're interconnected to all of those things.
That's true.
Like, as an ecosystem, we have had many shifts, and to acknowledge that, our students who carry some of the trauma, and us shifting to be more of a trauma informed and trauma sensitive school.
Right.
We also are thinking about administrators and teachers, and what are some of the tools that we need to be more trauma-informed and trauma-sensitive. But, it also will have to get out into the community, too. How can we get parents and community members, mentors, to also be trauma-informed and trauma-sensitive to our young people, but then also elders? Because it's not just our young people that are in such high need of having trauma-informed schools,
right,
and
right.
us being responsive to those needs. Also, I think in Marion, we have a young population and an older population that both have needs. So
that's true.
So I think that both of those, just taking that into account. Not dismissing the, you know, our 40 teachers that resigned, and we have upper administration that has mostly all shifted over the last year. It's now we're just shifting the culture. Right now, we're also working on a called an equity audit, and we're auditing the belonging factors mm-hmm. for staff and students.
What does that mean, belonging?
So we've had staff, they take a survey, kind of asking about, like, what are some equitable practices in Marion City Schools? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you belong? What are the things that make you feel like you don't belong? And kind of like, so first taking that survey, and then you get in a focus group. Maybe me, you, your niece, Miss Dyer, and other people, we get in a focus group. And then we talk about, like, what are the things that drive equity at Marion City Schools?
Right.
How practices make you feel like you belong? What are the practices that make you feel like you don't belong?
Right.
So you get in, go from taking a survey to then doing focus groups and talking a little bit about that. We are in the third phase of that process. We started in August. So we started with upper administration. Then from upper administration, we went to school buildings with, you know, principals and teachers, cooks, custodians, bus drivers, kind of like vast everyone.
Okay.
And next are the students. We're going to do the same thing with students, grades 4th through 12th. So really, as we're shifting the culture, we're also trying to get like a temperature check on how we're doing, which
okay.
is very critical to the work that I do around diversity.
Right, right. Yeah. I understand that. I understand mm-hmm. that. And I know, we all know that changes come.
Yeah.
You know, whether we are ready for them or not
yeah.
is a different question. But
sure.
you guys put your heads together and came up with some type of solutions.
Yeah.
Our culture is changing
yeah.
fastly,
uh-huh.
you know, and we still have to hold on to some of the things that we have learned
right.
in the past to help us through our future that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, evolving right before us. So what other issues do you think that we as parents or elders in the community, and I guess that would be it, parents and elders.
Sure.
What else do you think we need to do as far as to help our children
yeah.
in school age?
I really think about, again, this Black History Month
mm-hmm.
is like deciding what we want to teach around Black history, Black culture.
Okay.
I think that's a very critical piece of raising African American children, is teaching them about their history and culture. From what I see, like I went with my seventh graders yesterday,
okay.
they really want to know more about the Black Panthers, about Malcolm X, about Martin Luther King, about Ida B. Wells, about Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
So these are times and periods and cultural moments that the kids or the teens want to know more about. So I
okay.
think that alongside school, what we're teaching and doing, parents, grandparents, the YMCA, churches, everyone can be around trying to teach on a factual and also affirmative Black history and Black culture to our young people, because it's a critical need. And then when you talk about other cultures, I think it's just as important to teach a factual and affirmative Black history and Black culture to them.
Right.
Yeah.
So what does that have to do with, I don't know if this is a true fact, but we've heard that they want to change how history is read in the textbooks. And I don't know who's a part of that, but as far as taking slavery out and the Holocaust out,
sure.
is this a true statement?
It is. In some textbooks, in some states, they definitely want to gloss over. I was reading a book this morning on George Washington Carver, and it was interesting to read. George Washington Carver was orphaned to a German couple whose last name was Carver. In the book, what it says is, like, the German couple, although they did not believe in slavery, they mm-hmm. had a large farm that they needed to tend to. And I was like, okay, so there's a conflict. Like, I don't believe in the practice of slavery in Missouri. However, I do believe, and I need to make sure that the grounds are tilled, the things are harvested, and things are reaped, and all the, mm-hmm. the things like that. Mm-hmm. And really kind of like talking factually about, like, just because this particular German couple didn't believe in slavery, they benefited from free labor right. of slavery. So the book was really interesting in way they had to try to paint the portrait mm-hmm. of that. And I think if we're not mindful of the language, then we will think that slavery was an easy or good thing for Black and African people. So as we're reading, we really have to, I think we do need to get in groups with each other and talk through books.
Yes.
Talk
yes.
through and say, like, hey, you're reading this. Oh, I'm reading this. Let's kind of talk through, like, let's do meaning making together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do that a lot with adults who are teachers, but also with young people. And if we're reading a book, we just do meaning making together. Because mm-hmm. I'm bringing my own kind of social and cultural kind of lenses and thinking right, right. to something.
Right.
And they're also bringing their own social and cultural ways of thinking about a book to this particular text that I'm reading. I'm not just reading it just blank. I'm reading mm-hmm. it because I have a history. I've been taught things. I've kind of learned some things, and I'm kind of bringing that to that. So you're right. And if we really want, I'm thinking about, like, Black young people particularly, if we really want them to get a really great framing of history, I think we could also start locally. We could start by thinking about, like, Ida Mae Mendenhall, who mm-hmm. is the first African-American graduate of Marion City Schools.
Okay.
This wonderful figure, graduates in 1899.
Whoa, okay.
She wow. is, like, she is a part of the first Negro Women's Club here in Marion, Ohio, helps kind of, is a founder and starts mm-hmm. it. And, you know, Negro clubs for women back then had two missions. One was, like, the culture, like, talking about the culture, educating, but then also supporting poor families.
Right,
and
right.
doing that kind of benefit for women and children.
Right, right.
I mean, I think there's some things that we can learn from our ancestors of the past that, like you were saying, that we can bring into the future. Studying.
Well, yeah, we can't forget all the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would, I don't know if that would serve us the right way, because they say if you don't learn, or if you don't at least study your history and keep your history in front of you, it will be repeated if you lose mm-hmm. sight of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what I heard was that they were trying not to make the young people feel guilty
mm-hmm.
as being a white or Caucasian mm-hmm. race about slavery, like
sure.
they really did something wrong, and not for us, our young people, to feel bitter because mm-hmm. of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I see both those things, but I just don't know how we should, you know, like
yeah.
attack these things or teach mm-hmm. these type of things.
Yeah. I think it's important. You know, before I was working here, I worked in South Korea. I taught there for, what, a year and a half, and I was teaching at a university. And half Korean students in my classroom, half Chinese students in my classroom. And I was teaching a book, it was Asada Shakur's autobiography. And she's kind of writing about her own experience growing up in North Carolina, being a part of the Black Panthers,
okay.
and then the reason why she moves to Cuba. And it was interesting in teaching that text, Korean students and also Chinese students, they kind of wanted to learn more.
Okay.
I think a lot of times that's when we're teaching our culture and our history, the object is to hook young people to want to, if you don't learn more right now, to hook you into this project to want to learn more in the future.
Right.
Like a good song, right?
Right.
A good song that has a good hook, like it plays in your mind forever.
Yes, it does. Yes,
and
it
I think that's the object. If we're, you know, teaching about from slavery to freedom, or Jim Crow to freedom,
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
let's say the Black Panthers to freedom, or the 90s hip-hop generation to freedom. And I keep
right.
saying to freedom because that has been on our ancestors' tongue in every generation.
True.
Like,
true.
We've always kind of thought about, like, what they call freedom dreams.
Mm-hmm,
Robin D.G.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly writes about, we've always had these kind of freedom dreams. Take it back to your niece, right?
Right.
In a dream in which she kind of, oh, this dream.
Right.
And now she has this book.
Yes.
I mean, and, you know, back in the day, what our ancestors would do, they kind of would write in their journals or kind of talk to each other about this notion of flying back to Africa, like the notion of a flying African going back. So we have to be able to tell those stories and hook young people, whether they're black or they're white or Latino, Native American, because black culture and black history, it's like a world history and a world literacy.
Yes.
And if told right, or if told in a way and created in a way, like, it could really be medicine for community and belonging.
I think so. And a self of being.
Yes.
You know, which is so important. Because when you grow up and all you see is like, not all you see, but like predominantly you see a race of people and it does not look like you, then you need to know where you fit in.
Yeah.
Who am I? You know, where did I come from? Why am I here? Why is it like this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the type of answers that they need. Well, can I move on? Can I have great success in my life because I'm just not one of them?
Yeah.
You know, how do I look at myself? How do I perceive myself? Am I important enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of us get lost in the shuffle of trying to find our position in the world. So I thank God for people who love people.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. That's true.
No matter what color they are, and they're there to help and to assist. And just like slavery, some of them opened their doors and let us through, you know, and to hide us during the freedom struggle, you know, trying to find freedom. So appreciative of people that God has touched their hearts to
Definitely.
Be a part of, you know, history and us moving forward as a people.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because yesterday in our conversation, our young people are interested in, like, going and learning about the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
But they also said, like, well, how does that impact us here?
Right.
They are a very here kind of moment.
Right.
Like, what did that look like here in Marion?
Now. Right, right.
In Marion County, in Central Ohio, in Ohio in general. So I think that claiming that history does a lot to improve the sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
That you were active in your own freedom.
Yes.
You were active in writing. You were active in thinking, active in trying to get free. And other communities, too, were active in doing things to help free people when they were, they kind of, like, worked against it. Like, the narrative of John Brown. John Brown was, like, a very, like, intense and saying, like, he detested the notion of anyone being enslaved.
Right.
And slavery in general, that, you know, he would kind of give up everything. But we also have to connect John Brown to the church in this kind of tradition of Jesus going into the temple and flipping tables.
Right.
Because you're not working for what they call the least of these.
Right.
So John Brown is connected to that like righteous indignation tradition in the Bible.
Right.
In a way. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. That is great. And unfortunately, some things have developed in our country.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any of your students have asked any questions regarding this. The five black policemen that attacked this young boy, I put it like that, because I think he was only 22 years old.
Yeah.
And it's such a scar on us as a people, you know. Because of the things that happened with George Floyd and how the protests went about and all that. But we were not alone in the protests that went about. Plus, it was blatantly in front of us. We all saw this. It wasn't like we heard it. So now we have these five black policemen who have killed a black youth. So how will you address this with your students? Or do you think you have to?
I think I do. I think I have a unique position. And rather than just talking about this incident, like it's like a one-off incident, I went back to 2015, and there was this movie called Fruitvale Station with Michael B. Jordan. He's a teacher, poet, writer named Tyson Amir. He has a book called Black Boy Poems, which we use in our curriculum, or we use in Harambe particularly.
Okay.
And I use a poem from him called A Poem for Mario and use that like yesterday, and then also I'm going to use it tomorrow with my 7th graders and 6th graders on Friday. And in the poem, he kind of talks a little bit about Mario and how he was quiet, introverted, smart, and all these things that a black male might be in your classroom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's still, he was still murdered by police in San Francisco. One of the things that I wanted them to get at, my students, I wanted them to think about like how this particular teacher, how the teacher framed the kid, right?
Right.
Because when we're listening to Ben Crump or parents or others, there's a certain type of framing or the story that they want to tell about Tyre Nichols.
Right.
Or about George Floyd that the media, the police statement, the toxicology report might not try to tell.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do with them, is tell the most humanizing story of this particular black young person.
Okay.
That way, therefore, they also feel humanized.
Right.
During a time of, which it could be a 1967, where, you know, those flashpoints where, because the 60s, if you think about it, were a time where, yeah, like mass assassinations of black leaders, not just in the U.S., but also in Africa. And so cities are like going up in flame because right. they feel like this kind of injustice. So what I want to do is I want to be with them and hold space, teach, use poetry as a kind of contemplative practice.
Okay.
You know, and a practice of making them feel seen, heard, and they can just be in my space.
Right.
I'm not going to deny it's happening because that's the worst way to be is you deny it. I want them to kind of like come in. And the first thing I always say is like, I want you to take care of yourself to be able to breathe. If you need to talk to someone, please do that.
Oh, that's great. That's
so
good.
I think holding space for our young people, particularly that might look like George Floyd or look like Tyre Nichols or look like, you know, and. I think it's important for them to feel seen, heard, and all those things.
That's great. That's a good way of looking at that because, like you said, it is somewhat of an isolated situation. Very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so ugly.
Sure.
And, you know, people look at us and like, well, you know, what are you guys going to do? How do you think about that now? Black on black crime. Well, we don't like it.
Yeah.
Maybe not be able to change it, but we don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, we're not edging people on to say, well, go ahead and do this or do that because he looks like you.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you know, the other thing about that is self-hate.
Yes.
Like when you're a person in power, whether you're the mayor or the police chief or a police officer or a teacher, like how you look, no matter what your color is as an adult.
Right.
When you see a black young person. Do you fear them?
Right.
Do you love them? Do you care for them? Do you have a feeling of like community with them? Do you have a feeling that you kind of like fear in your body? What does it do? I think that's a question. When a black young person's body shows up in a space and you're an adult, like how do you feel about yourself?
Wow.
Many of us as black people, I think that we've internalized a lot of self-hate, whether it's not learning about our culture and history and the curriculum. If it is like learning that, you know, about lynch laws and Jim Crow and all those things. So for us to figure out how we affirm ourselves, how we create belonging, how do we kind of see each other and
right.
seek caring people.
Right.
I think that's the medicine to like the longer genocide of against black people. But it is unfortunate that this particular young person had to lose their life. When they are black and have Crohn's disease, 150 pounds, and the officers are like me.
Mm-hmm.
We're tall,
mm-hmm.
former football players. Like,
isn't that crazy?
Like, I'm 6'1", 260 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the police officers are over 6 foot, over 250 pounds. And for them to see this young person who's skinny, and so-called weaker than them and
mm-hmm.
then harm them. I think that's, I mean, it's sad. I mean, it in my gut, that it feels really sad. And I'm sad. I'm sad for the family. And I hope that they get justice, you know, because justice doesn't just look like sending those officers to jail or prison. Justice, it looks like it not happening to others.
Right.
And there's a kind of apology and there's changed behavior.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. That's what repentance is.
Sure.
Change behavior.
Yeah, I love that. I love that notion. Yeah, I like that.
Right, repentance, you know. So if you don't, you say, I'm sorry and I repent. If you don't change your behavior, right, then you really wasn't sorry.
That's real.
You know, it really didn't affect you that way. Mm-hmm. So we have a few minutes left. So what are you looking forward to in 2023, Johnny?
2023, well, I hope that we have Black Joy Summerfest again. That's always a fun event.
Right.
I actually am really resting this year.
Okay.
Like, I really am trying to take more naps, drink more water, hydrate my skin more. Right. And just take care of myself. And I hope other people can do the same thing.
Amen.
Like, rest more, like, less caffeine, less fast food, more good food, more sun. And I'm just trying to be the best at taking care of myself, and hopefully we can do that, because I feel like that's the revolution, is to take care of ourselves.
It is. And enjoy your life.
Yeah.
You know, you can't enjoy your life when you're so compacted with everything else and all these different concerns and these programs and these obligations, and then you don't have time for yourself.
That's real.
You know, and you do have to take a moment and step back and say, well, why am I doing all this stuff? And I'm only one person. Yeah, I want to impact my community. You know, I want to impact my family. I'm just, and do things for myself. You know, that I can look back and say, oh, well, I did this and I did that. And what else can I do? But it's so, once you do that, it's so hard to like step back and say, well, I need a day off. You know?
Yeah. Wow. I need a day off. I need a nap.
Right. Absolutely. Because if you don't, you will burn out.
That's true. It's true.
You will, and I don't care how young you are, you will burn out. So that's a good concept for 2023. And hopefully those who are listening, Johnny, will take heed to that.
Rest.
You know, rest. Enjoy yourself. Drink your water. Eat right.
Eat right. Lotion your body. Put your lotion on.
Yes.
Especially in this winter.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yes, I've always done that. Skin sensitive, you know.
Right.
So I've always done that. But thank you, Johnny. We are out of time. I have so enjoyed you, and I'm
likewise,
sure our listeners have too. You have a blessed day.
You too.
And thank you. Hopefully it won't take so long for you to come back.
Right, definitely. To see us, right? I'll come back and see you soon.
All right, then. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening to A Voice of a People. Linda Sims here on WGH Talk. Next time, be blessed. Take care. Love you.